Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back in the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Young Man Blues by The Who from Live at Leeds. Sending that out to Gigi Jackson, whose game buzzer-beating runner was denied a rightful point by the officials.
Do you believe it was a rightful point that was denied by the officials?
I think it probably was a three, but the... they didn't have like NBA Finals level camera work going on. And so
No, they did not. They 100% did not.
So they didn't really have a good look at it. And certainly like in real time, it's the kind of thing you instinctively would call a two because he's like 5 feet inside the line when he shoots the ball. But upon reflection, I think it probably was, should have been a three, but also like, let's go home, man. There was like 75 fouls called in the fourth quarter of that game. It was time for the game to end at Summer League.
There were 77 fouls called over the course of the entire game. The game lasted 2 hours and 20 minutes. Jemai Meshack somehow fouled out, even though he was given 10 fouls. It was, I agree, the time for it to end. Do you think the officials actually said it's time for it to end?
No, because they took too long. If that was their instinct, they wouldn't have taken so long looking at it. And so, no, they wasted even their own time deliberating when they should have just said, "Oh well, it's too unclear to overturn. Let's all leave. This is not the NBA Finals. This is a Summer League game." Shout out to our boy Jemai Meshack though. One assist short, Young Man Blues. One assist short of the rare assist foul double double.
You don't see that often. You just don't see that often. All right. So Gigi had 27 and he had moments that looked, should have had 28, had moments that were absolutely phenomenal. There was one sequence where he was guarding the inbounds pass, comes down, gets the block off the backboard at the other end, sprints to the other end, gets the bucket and one, like he had moments, but we know he can have moments. I have to tell you, I'm not discerning enough to know if his overall game was like, what does one take from that?
I mean, it's Summer League. It's just, it's too messy to get a lot of nuance out of the game. Right. It just gets so messy. There was one play. He was on the wrong end of a highlight for Isaiah Collier where he's guarding Collier one-on-one and Collier just hits him with a spin move and goes right past him to the rim. Like, you know, you're a 6A guy guarding a point guard. That's kind of a tough spot. But also, like, Gigi seemed to have no hope, like, of containing him on that move. He had zero assists. I don't know what the count is at this point, but it's something like 35 shot attempts to zero assists through two games, right? There is that. But also, like, A, Summer League's messy, and B, that's, like, not his role. You know, they're not doing the old Taylor Jenkins offense where he's going to be asked to, like, you know, recognize cutters and do playmaking and whatever. It's like if his role is to, like, catch and shoot or catch and attack the rim, like, he's doing those two things pretty well on the offensive end right now. Like, that's probably his role if he's coming off the bench is, like, you know, take your open shots and like go hard to the rack or rebound and go up strong. And he's doing that, man. He's going up over the top of people and dunking. Like he's going hard to the rim. Like, again, he was good in summer league last year and then he had a bad season. So it's no guarantee of anything, but but it's good to see him out there, playing hard and playing with force and being productive.
What do you think a good year for Gigi Jackson looks like?
Well, the team is so crowded right now. And you know, you've got him and Cedric Howard and Jalen Wells and Vince Williams. And, you know, I do think that Isolo is going to try to play. Like, the system will be different than what the Grizzlies ran early in the season, but the approach to, like, pace and depth will, I think, be the same, because I think that was always Isolo. So I think he's going to play at least 10, maybe 11, 12, like, you know, rotation and play fast. And I think that he will – Gigi will have opportunity to play for the Grizzlies. And so I think you want him to be a scoring threat when he plays, and you want him to hit the boards, and you want him to tighten up the defense to the degree that it's not a drag. I don't think you're expecting Gigi to certainly become Jalen Wells on defense, but you want him to be playable. And last season he wasn't playable. He was so bad on defense you couldn't put him out there. So you need to get him to get to the level where his defense does not keep him off the floor. Then if once he's on the floor, like, be a guy who, like, you know, who's a good points per minute, like, scoring guy, because I do think that will be his game. It may end up being a game off the bench instead of us a star. Who knows? Or maybe he'll be a star. I mean, who knows? But I think he will be a scoring-oriented player wherever he is, whatever kind of player he is.
So sort through those wings for me at the beginning of the season. How do you imagine it going?
Oh, I think the default lineup for the Grizzlies is going to be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jalen Wells as starting wings. I think where you get to the end of the season and where you get going beyond this season is a different question. The biggest bet is clearly on Cedric Howard right now.
Right. Yeah.
The other biggest bet might be on, like, player to be named later in the with that Phoenix pick. Like, it could be that a year from today we're talking about the Grizzlies starting wings being Cedric Howard and AJ DeBanza. Right, if they can jump up and get the second pick in the draft with that Phoenix pick or whatever. And so I don't think, you know, I think you start out with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jalen Wells. I think if things go well, that's not where you end up a year from now.
Cedric Howard will obviously get his chances, and then you got Vince and you got Gigi.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a year from now you're talking about Cedric Howard and Gigi Jackson as the wings of the future, right? I do think Vince has gotten a little lost in the mix in terms of the way we talk about it. Not the way I talk about it. Obviously, I'm in the bag for Vince. But I think he's gotten a little lost in the mix and the way people view the Grizzlies. I'm somewhat concerned he's getting too lost in the mix internally with the Grizzlies. But I think if they're going to play this style, and not just in terms of depth and pace, which affords opportunities to more players, but to me the most interesting thing about the game last night was the first quarter. And in the first quarter, it wasn't about players. I think we rightfully watched the summer league and focus on how individual players play who are going to be on the roster, because that's usually the main thing to take out of summer league. But Isolo's coaching this team, and I think the first quarter, especially after that, it sort of becomes a mess. But there were real indicators of play style in terms of the defensive pressure, the full court, three-quarter court defensive pressure, And some other things offensively too, but particularly in terms of that defensive pressure, if he's going to play a deep rotation and emphasize on-ball defensive pressure, I think that really opens up a lane for Vince Williams to get back in the mix. It also fits Jalen Wells. It fits Scottie Pippen. It didn't fit Luke Kennard. It didn't really fit Desmond Bane. I think you're seeing a little bit of continuity there. It doesn't feel like the Ty Jerome, but you're generally seeing like a shift towards players who are going to be more adept at playing that style of defense, which is what Isolo seems to want.
Yeah, it is striking. Obviously, head coach doesn't normally coach summer league, and we're seeing a different approach. As you pointed out, well, at the end of last year, Isolo, because of the rotation limits, the limits of what he had available, it seemed like, and because of the urgency of the moment, he did not play a deep rotation. But as we sorted out what was whose last year, that part was Isolo's. The play a lot of guys.
Yeah, I mean, Jenkins already played fast pace in a deep rotation, so it was also Jenkins, but it was specifically that was not Jenkins going away from the ESOLO philosophy. That was Jenkins leaning more into the ESOLO philosophy.
So, but it is interesting, as you point out, the pressure defense, they did not have a roster to do it last year. I mean, they were one of the least athletic teams in the league. And now... Right. And now they may well have still not one of the most athletic teams.
More so. I think when you think about the perimeter rotation, like the guys I just mentioned, Scottie Pippen, Jalen Wells, Vince Williams, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, that's four guys right there who are more get-in-your-face perimeter defensive guys. I think Josh showed some good stuff early last season, actually, in doing some of that and before some of the injury stuff he had. And so they do have some guys to do that. You know, that has not been G.G. Jackson's forte, mostly not for physicality reasons, mostly, although some he's a little upright. And it's not necessarily Ty Jerome style, but they have built more athleticism and length and raginess and aggression into their perimeter cast of players. And to get back what got me on that tangent, I think that style of play is another way for Vince Williams to get back in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, just like I think, like you said, G.G. Jackson will have an opportunity to play. We can be certain of that. He will have at some point, he will have an opportunity. And at some point, Vince will have an opportunity. And 2 years ago, he made the most of his opportunity. So if he has, so in that sense, I think it is up to him. Anything else particularly strike you from last night's game, Camp Spencer? I feel a real degree of confidence when he's got an open three, I'll say that.
So Cam Spencer is just a really good basketball player who's particularly a really good shooter. I think the questions about him are his athleticism as you get to real NBA basketball. And to me, it's still an unknown because we just haven't seen it. He's played like two games he played that weren't garbage time in the NBA, like ever at this point. And so you know he can shoot. You know he can process the game. He can pass the ball too. There's all of that. But can he handle the ball against defensive pressure? The turnovers have been pretty high for him in these games. And can he defend when guys are trying to pick on him? And that really hasn't happened in these summer league games. So this was an NBA playoff game. Like the coach would say, okay, we're going to go. We're trying to win. Right. We're going to go at Cam Spencer. That's not really what they do in these games.
Anyone else? Meshack got his fouls, got the near double double. Like he wants to guard you. Well, he does.
No, I like that he had 9 assists. And it wasn't like he wasn't playing point guard. It was just moving the ball in the flow, like just being alert and being aware, and that sort of alertness and awareness, you know, that you have on defense can sometimes, you know, if you have the skill, you know, you can be a good connective passer. And so I don't know if he's ever going to be a shooter, but if he can be a guy who moves the ball well on top of being a plus defender, like maybe that is the path to being an NBA player for him.
In terms of the Grizzlies roster, I remember when you talked about the transition that they are undergoing, you said this may not be all done this summer. It may be done at the trade deadline, and it may be done next summer. Now, they actually have done maybe more than, you know, what they've done. They've used some of their assets.
So the big reason why I point to next summer as like at least that long is because of that pick they got coming in, likely a Phoenix pick, not necessarily. But that pick has a chance to be as high as second in the draft. It is highly likely to be a top 10 pick. And it is so valuable because of that draft is so apparently so good. I don't think they're going to move it. I think they're going to wait and see where that pick lies. And so whether they use it for a player or they trade it then, they're not doing anything with it until next summer, and that is the biggest asset they have in terms of future building.
Remind me where it came from.
It's part of the Desmond Bane trade, but it's part of a complicated.
How did it come from Phoenix to Orlando?
There's a really complicated. There's actually four teams involved in a swap with three picks. The shorthand is everyone's been saying is the Grizzlies are going to get the Suns pick. That's probably true, but it's not necessarily true.
And for the Grizzlies' perspective, it's the worst of the Wizards and Suns pick, and so they're assuming
it's more complicated than that. Yeah. But that is a slightly less shorthand version. Yeah.
How are they set up though in terms of and honestly, one of their valuable assets could be their own pick, depending on how the season goes. Like that, it doesn't seem to be as valuable as a Suns pick, but you could very well have two lottery picks next year. As the season unfolds, how are they positioned to do something at the trade deadline, one way or another?
Oh, well, their position, it depends on what they want to do, right? Again, like, if you want to trade that Suns pick, like, but I just don't think they're going to want to do that.
Yeah.
But they still have all of their own future picks, all of them going forward, and they still have another Orlando pick. So they're plus two with first-round picks going forward. So even if you take that one pick off the board and say, we can't do anything with this until we know where it lands because this is too potentially valuable, you can still trade, like, four first-round picks or whatever in a deal if you want to. So they have tons of draft picks they can trade. They have tons of contracts of different sizes they can put together. I mean, the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope contract is like $20 million, has 1 year left. The John Conchar contract, which is Jitty lives through all of this. Jitty's still around. That's a $6 million contract that's going to be on the books with only one more year left. The Santi Aldama contract would be tradable by then. That's going to be probably about 18. Details on that are not out, but I think that's what it'll be. So if they want to do some significant trade that doesn't touch, like, John Morant, Jaren Jackson, or the core young players, they're Brandon Clark, 2 years left. That's a 12. So they have these medium-sized contracts from medium rotation players that are not the stars or the young guys. So you can trade one or more of those with picks and make all kinds of trades if you want to. The other thing they could do, and I don't think they want to do this, but it's still out there. Like, if they decide to blow it up and just completely rebuild, like, they're well-positioned to do that if they decided to do it.
Yeah, because they got their own picks and whatever. They would certainly be able to accumulate a whole bunch of stuff if that's the way the season goes. It doesn't seem to be that that's where they want to head. In terms of the other thing last night that was sort of fun was Utah, as a really bad team, has a lot of their best players, or most promising, a lot of their future is playing for their summer league team. And so we saw that last night. You got to see Ace Bailey, saw Kyle Filipowski, Cody Williams, obviously Bryce Sensabaugh with the 37 points. Walter Clayton Jr. struggled. Like, it was
Isaiah,
on and on.
Isaiah Collier. There's like,
what's
there,
that?
There were like, Isaiah Collier. There was the Grizzlies had three main roster players in that game. They were all second round picks, right? Cam Spencer, Jalen Wells, Gigi Jackson. The Warriors had at least six main roster players. And I think the only one who wasn't a first round pick was Kyle Filipowski, and he was basically a first round pick. I think he went like top of the second or whatever, and would have been a first round pick if not for some of that off court family drama stuff. And so, you know, they had a lot of first round picks out there. How good those guys are, I don't know. Ace Bailey, I thought, looked pretty good. He had a bad first game. I thought he looked good last night. But it is funny to actually watch him because I'd never seen him play before. I didn't watch Rutgers or whatever.
Right.
Like, he looks good, but, like, the Kevin Durant comps are stupid. What were people even talking about? He's not even remotely that size.
Right.
He's like 6 inches shorter than Kevin Durant.
Yeah. It's interesting because they just have this incredible collection of players, none of whom look like they're going to be. Yeah, whatever. Ace Bailey could, I suppose, be a star at some point. Who knows what he's going to be? It does feel like in the Western Conference, like, who's going to be bad? The Jazz are going to be bad. The Suns, the only team that it feels like is trying to be bad is the Jazz. Like, everybody else, it feels like, is trying to be better, don't you think?
The Jazz are the only team that is dedicated to being bad. It has no hope. I mean, they're really dedicated now. Like, you look at the Colin Sexton trade and the Jordan and the John Collins trade.
Yeah,
they are fully dedicated to being bad.
To being bad, 100%. They want to be
lottery
bad
stuff as they can for next year's draft. So they're going to be 15th. It would be a huge disappointment to them if they weren't 15th in the West. but no one else is trying to be bad. But I don't think much of New Orleans and Sacramento. Like, they could be good if everything breaks right. But those teams sort of need everything to break right, and so I don't have a lot of faith in them. But your point is right. Like, in theory, the West from, like, 2 to 14 has a lot of fluidity in it. Utah is going to be terrible, and the Thunder are going to be great. And in between, there's going to be a big difference between whoever's 2 and whoever's 14, but none of that's locked in. There's a lot of fluidity based on health and who takes steps forward and who declines and all that kind of stuff.
Would you sign up right now? I just happened to say this yesterday when I was talking to Jason. I was on his show, and I said, if you put me, the Grizzlies have a home play-in game, I would take it.
I think that is a medium to maybe slightly better than medium outcome for the Grizzlies. I think it's very possible that their outcome is higher than that. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they finished fifth or sixth. I feel better about it if the Zach Edey injury wasn't there.
Right. That's what I mean. No, the injury is going to
chances.
Okay.
I'll take that my chances. Fair.
I think if Zach Edey, that's a bad nickname. If Zach Edey were healthy, I don't think I would say that. But I assume they're going to be a little slow getting out of the gates. We don't know when Jaren's going to be. Anyway, yeah, it is a.
I do think the Grizzlies will be almost universally projected in the play-in range.
Their latest, I saw one sports book had an over/under for win total at 40.5, and that last year was 46. This particular book had 46.5. So, whatever. All right. Thank you, Chris. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
It's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and more. You can read his stuff, of course, always over there at the Daily Memphian. He and Drew Hill do a spectacular job of covering the Grizzlies for us. I cannot recommend reading them more highly. And by the way, they got a podcast over at the Daily Memphian as well. All right, we're going to take a break. We got Fish on Friday on Tuesday when we come back. And here's the thing. Fishman and I are in the same place. So we're going to be, we have literally one microphone that we're going to be fighting over. We may come to blows. This is Can't Miss Radio. Coming up next, Fish on Friday on Tuesday. It is the Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Gawkins Show, joined now by our man in Washington, D.C., Charles Fishman. He's the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for excellence in business writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. Now, as it happens, we normally do this. I'm in Memphis, and Charles is in D.C., and I'm in studio, and Charles is on the phone. We both happen to be in the same room in northern Michigan, and there is only one microphone, and so I am predicting a fist fight as we will wrestle.
Well,
we
can start.
There you go. There we go.
We don't happen to be in the same room. We found ourselves on Tuesday morning in the same room in Traverse City.
Yeah, that's true.
No, we're both here in Michigan.
We are.
Quote unquote on vacation.
You're on vacation. I'm working.
Although both working, in fact. Right. I'm trying to be on vacation.
I'll be back next week.
I'm in the room from which you do the show.
We're in the room where it
happens.
When
you're here. In the room where it happens.
In the room where
it happens. I don't know that we've ever, I did it once in studio in Memphis when I was visiting you there. It's only the second time in the history of Fish on Friday on Tuesday that we've been in the same room. And it's not clear that it's going to work very well.
Nope, not at all clear. It's going to work very well.
And
but
you
listen,
want to introduce
only
the third person?
Wait, oh, yeah, my friend Mark is here. He's an avid listener from Arizona, and he's in the room where it happens as well.
We never have a live studio.
We never have a live studio.
Thank God.
With a live studio. It is filmed before a live studio audience. So,
we often talk about doing the live show on stage and asking people to pay.
Exactly.
This is kind of a little bit of a
dry run, a little test run.
Although Mark is definitely not paying to be here.
Yeah. So, all right, let's not tarry.
We blast through items.
Last week you told us about the Disney cruise, the young girl who fell off the boat and the father who gallantly plunged in after her, lifted her up. The boat sent out a little rescue boat. They happened to pluck these people from the sea. That was a great story, and I have on my list that you have an update.
Yeah, there's just a brief update. I thought you were going to get to the accountability first.
We're going to get to that. Don't do you? There will be accountability.
So there was a whole thread on social media that the father had put his daughter, had set her on the rim of a porthole to take her picture, and then she fell off. And the true stories come out from the Broward County Sheriff's Department. Broward County is the South Florida county that includes Fort Lauderdale, where the ship returned. They investigated. In fact, the young girl climbed up on a railing and then climbed over the railing onto the porthole. The porthole isn't really what you would think of as a porthole. It's just a big window on the deck that's round, that's that looked like it was about 3 feet wide or 3.5 feet wide. And then she fell backwards out of that while she was standing on it. And his wife alerted him. I don't know how far away he was. And he plunged out. They were on the fourth
deck. The wife said, "Hey, Dave, she went overboard."
Heidi's in
so
the water.
So much for heroism on the part of the wife.
Don't do that. That's not, sometimes I wouldn't necessarily.
Well, maybe she identified the right person for the job.
Exactly. I wouldn't necessarily
throw the mom under.
I think right under the boat. So
right under the boat.
And he went 20 feet into the water. 20 feet doesn't sound like much, but I bet almost no one who isn't an athletic diver, somebody who goes off
diving
boards.
You mean once he hit the water, he was 20 feet under? He went
no,
under.
He went off the boat at 20 feet. 20 feet is the top of, is really, right. If you're standing at a three-story window, and so did the girl. And the girl held herself, was able to swim at age 5, which is great, until her dad plunged in and got her. And then he was able to dog paddle with her. No, I don't. There was talk that people threw life vests in. I don't know if one got to him or not for 20 minutes. Again, if you're rescuing your daughter, you do what you have to do. But dog paddling for 20 minutes
while holding a scared and squirmy
5-year-old is something. So I just wanted to circle back on that in case you got the wrong story.
I want to circle back on the other thing, because last July I wasn't on, and I wouldn't.
I would not
have allowed this to go unchallenged. You were talking
to
Jeffrey.
Big beautiful bill.
You said there was no chance it was going to be signed, and I know you like to tie. You like to bring things around. There's accountability,
right, absolutely.
And
not for the bill, but for me.
You said that it was no way it was going to be signed by July 4th.
A week ago, the Senate passed it on Fish on Friday, Tuesday, that morning. And I said, there is no way this bill is going to be done to be signed on July 4th, which was Friday.
And I believe it was signed on July 4th, which was Friday.
In a big event.
Ceremony.
There were B-2 bombers flying over.
Right.
I definitely did not miss it. Our mutual friend, John Martin, and his family were out in Washington, D.C. visiting and saw the bombers fly over, which, if you didn't know what was going on, was a little bit of a spooky moment. No, they did it. But here's the thing. They did it by completely ignoring the changes that the Senate made. So I was predicting that on the basis that something like between 12 and 20 members of the House denounced the Senate version of the bill. They said it was appalling, disgusting. Those are the kinds of words they used. And 2 days later, they voted for it. And they voted for the Senate version because Donald Trump said, "I want to sign this on July 4th.
And I think what you missed was his grip on the party. I think that's what we have seen this time and time and time and time again. They can talk about listen, we care about the deficits, or we care about fiscal responsibility, or we care about Medicaid or whatever. And in the end, Donald Trump tells them they must do it, and they do it. Like, we've seen that every single time. When have they not capitulated? They have always capitulated. And so
and this, I guess, what without getting too deep into the pocket, into the politics, there was no reason to pass the bill on July 4th except that Donald Trump wanted them to. And the objections to the change. So the House passed the bill. It goes to the Senate. The Senate made something like 40 changes. They increased the deficit. They reduced, they kicked more people off Medicaid. There were people on the House, Republican moderates, Republican conservatives, who objected to both those things. I would say it's okay to use the word violently. They really thought the Senate bill was bad. And I thought that someone would say to President Trump, there's no hurry. Let us make this bill better. And then we'll have a conference committee.
To him, and he would have said, if you don't vote for it, I will primary you. Because what we've seen is...
That's true. I'm letting you own all that. But that's true. Right. He said, you have to vote for it now because I want to sign it on July 4th for no reason. I want to sign it on July 4th.
And they did.
I was wrong.
hey, Jeffrey, get that clip.
I was wrong.
Get that. We want to clip
July 8th,
that in future 10:36
a.m. Memphis time.
All right. We have some good news on the shoe front.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is kind of interesting. TSA is apparently going to let us keep our shoes on when we go through security. It has been 9 years, 2006, that we've been taking off our shoes at airport security checkpoints. We'll remind you why that happened in a minute, but people with TSA PreCheck, for which you pay about $15 a year, they've been allowed through without taking their shoes off. But now TSA is phasing out the use of shoes.
By the way, can I pause for a minute? Take back this microphone for a moment. That's the dumbest thing ever. If I was a terrorist who wanted to blow up with something in my shoes, I'd just make sure I have TSA PreCheck.
That's a great idea. What? Purchase TSA PreCheck for $15.
For $15.
Like, you can afford the bomb.
There's no integrity to that decision.
There have been questions about the logic of this. So this is based on Richard Reed, the quote-unquote shoe bomber, who was on a flight from Paris to Miami, who had bombs in the soles of his shoes and tried to ignite them and failed. Right. Smart enough to get the bombs into the soles of his shoes, which I wouldn't actually know how to do that without watching a YouTube video. And then he couldn't light them. And so the bomb did not go off. But since that moment, we have had to take off our shoes to have them x-rayed. I don't think the x-ray machines themselves detect bombs, they just look at the shoes and make sure that the soles of the shoes are solid rubber or whatever, leather. Here's the interesting thing. I looked this up because I am your Fish on Friday on Tuesday correspondent.
Redeem yourself, let's be honest.
And what now?
And you have to redeem yourself a little bit.
I do have to redeem yourself a little bit. I don't view that as redeeming. I had confidence in the Republican House members, and they let me down. Yes, they let me down. Exactly, the Republican House members let this good Democrat
down.
They couldn't let you down. Boy, you are going to get email. TSA has never detected a shoe bomb. TSA has never detected
a shoe bomb. They've not caught one in all the years?
They have not caught one. Millions of people a day, 9 years. Literally hundreds of millions of people a year times 10 years, a billion people have had their shoes examined. They haven't caught one shoe bomb. Now,
deterring the shoe bombs.
Is it right? That might be a sign of success rather than failure. Right. The first airports to get the waiver are BWI, that's Baltimore, Fort Lauderdale, Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, which is probably a place people fly through, Portland, Philadelphia and North Carolina's Piedmont Triad Airport, although reports that people in LAX...
This is being rolled out like a new Burger King burger kind of thing, right? Probably not quite as satisfying
as a new... But it's nice to not... If you've ever been to an airport where they wave the shoes, it's actually kind of a relief. It's actually kind of...
I didn't know such existence.
It's happened to me a couple of times in the last 2 or 3 years. Maybe they were testing it out. And to be honest, having to negotiate your carry-on,
would you rather take your shoes off or leave your laptop in your?
The laptop, I'm happy to have them X-ray. Laptops could be
bad. It's fine, but I don't like pulling it out.
I don't mind that. I would also point out very subtly, subtle change no one's noticed or commented on, you never need to take your toiletries out. You don't need your toiletries in a one-quart bag. You don't need to take them out separately and put them in the bin. That's all over. LAX and LaGuardia have also reported, passengers reporting, no more shoes. That's a nice change. TSA is being very coy about this at the moment.
They're just putting their toe in.
You might say they're just putting their toe in.
There you go. That's why you come here for that.
That's why you
come for the knowledge and the bad puns, ladies and gentlemen. The bad puns
are there no matter whether I'm on the air or not. Right. But you do keep stepping on the point. TSA has not revealed whether the technology is advanced in such a way that shoe bombs can be detected with the normal screening thing that you walk in, hold your hands up, and they zap.
I feel naked doing that. I feel exposed. I feel like
they're teaching me to submit.
I did want to get to the just dreadful, just horrific.
Just change the tone.
You can't get your mind around how devastating
what happened
the story
Texas.
Is about what oh, happened yeah. in Texas. So, what can you tell me about?
Well, I want to first. I want to refer people to a story. I should have given Jeffrey the link, but I didn't. The stories about this are so heartbreaking. All of them. Survivors. One surviving woman was found in a tree 12 miles downstream from where she was swept away from a campground. Another 20 miles. Imagine riding in a flooding river for 12 miles in a car. Going 30 miles an hour, that would take you half an hour. You're surrounded by crushing debris in a violent river in the dark at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. And then there was a wonderful, heartbreaking story by a Washington Post reporter who went to Camp Mystic with a father. Ugh. And the father was, of course, looking for his daughter, who was ultimately found dead, although not at the camp. And he went to her cabin, which had not been swept away, and he gathered belongings for the other parents, bracelets that girls like, some stuffed animals, in case that stuff wasn't protected. God, what a heartbreaking thing. So I don't have a lot to add. I think there's been a lot of discussion about warnings, NWS weather staffing. I'm on the record. I think if you have to cut meteorologists from the National Weather Service in the midst of surging climate change, you're not looking hard enough at the Defense Department. But National Weather Service forecasters in the forecast offices covering this area said staffing shortages were not a problem for this event. So we can put that aside. How much water? People are like, how could this happen? How could this overtake you? One flood gauge right upstream from the camp, and there were whole campgrounds with 20 RVs in camping slots where every RV is gone. The whole campground is swept clean. Where are those people? Where are their RVs? You know what the size of an RV is. The calculation is that, well, so at one flood gauge, the river rose 22 feet in 2 hours. That's 11 feet in an hour, 1 foot every 5 minutes for 2 hours nonstop. Right. You just think about that. That means that in 15 minutes, it goes from your knees to over your head, right? There was a story in the New York Times yesterday about a guy trying to rescue his family from a cabin. And he knew about the flooding. He knew about the warning. His kids were in a second cabin with his in-laws. They owned the first cabin and borrowed the second cabin. He woke up at 3 a.m. and the entire floor of his cabin was flooded. He was never able to get to the cabin his daughters and his in-laws were in. That cabin was ripped off its foundation. He got messages from his daughters as the cabin was being ripped away that said, "I love you." That's what they said. Totally devastating. So there's been calculations that between 2 trillion and 4 trillion gallons of water fell as rain in this event. What people say, oh, that's, you know, that would be 37 billion Olympic swimming pools. That doesn't help me. Like, what is 2 trillion gallons of water? If we look at the lower amount, well, here's one way of thinking about it. Not that helpful, but one way. All of New York City, population 8 million, uses 1 billion gallons of water a day. All of New York City, 1 billion gallons of water a day. 2 trillion gallons of water is 5 years of water for New York City. All day, every day, 5 years of water. That's crazy. Now, mind you, of course, one is water in nature and the other is human used water. So it's hard to understand. So let's talk about the Mississippi River for a minute. We all are, I'm intimately familiar with the Mississippi River.
We certainly are in Memphis. Yeah.
And in Memphis, you are certainly in.
Right by.
We're intimately familiar in different ways, but I was on a
tugboat.
Right, I was a tugboat deckhand on the Mississippi River.
Right?
And lived in New Orleans. You say it, but you don't really absorb the
I don't meaning. Really believe it. Honestly, I say it. I believe the business writing part. I don't really believe the
You don't really part. Believe I was a deckhand. I wasn't a good deckhand, but I was a deckhand.
It ended with Charles dislocating his shoulder.
We can check the disability records. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. The company I worked for has been absorbed by another company since then. And I'm going to give you the numbers in case there's anybody in the audience who wants to check this. But at Memphis, the measure of the flow of the Mississippi River is measured all the time by gauges as flood management, right. Drought management. At Memphis, the flow of the Mississippi River right now, today, is 560,000 cubic feet a second. A cubic foot is 7.5 gallons. 560,000 cubic feet a second. That's 4.2 million gallons of water passing by Memphis, a slice through the river every second. There's in the amount of water in 2 trillion, there's 476,000 seconds of Memphis River water. That is 5.5 days of the flow of the Mississippi
Holy
River.
Crap.
Five and a half days
of the Mississippi River
in 24 hours. In a tiny
little river.
Right. So that's why you can see video of entire 3-bedroom houses floating down the river. Because unimaginable.
You said that the National Weather Service has said that their cuts didn't have anything to do with this, whatever else. Okay. Did the warning, this separately, we know that the county did not, had warnings, could have done more in terms of enacting a warning system that they did not do, sirens and whatnot.
Right.
Do we know that that wouldn't have helped? In other words, was this so violent and dramatic that nothing would have helped?
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of bad will in assessing what happened, but I think a good, fair assessment. A meteorologist who used to be a Washington Post meteorologist and now works for a national weather company, Matthew Capucci, did the analysis, said there have been 13 flash flood warnings in this area in the last 5 years, and 7 flash flood watches. That's 20 in 5 years, probably concentrated in the rainy season in 4 months. So 20 in 20 months, one a month.
Yeah.
I myself get flash flood warnings on my phone for Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Probably twice a month in yeah. summer. And I look at them, we're not probably going to be washed away in a flash flood.
Right.
This had a terrible convergence, right? The rainfall was predicted, but nothing like this volume. And there were a series of warnings, including one at 1:15 that should have really woken everybody up. But it's 1:15 in the morning. These five camps arranged on the river are you know, not in great cell phone service. The county, Kerr County, did an analysis of this a couple years ago, and they could have put in place a siren system, automatic river gauges that trigger sirens when the flow gets to a point where you want everybody out. And sirens are different than an alert on your phone. First of all, they don't rely on the electromagnetic spectrum. And second of all, somebody in tornado country was saying this on the news the other day. When you learn at age 2 that the siren means not what should we do now or things are good. The siren means get out, get safe.
So a siren system would have helped.
I think a siren system would have helped. The head of the Kerr County County Commission said, quote unquote, it's too expensive. Our people don't want to pay for it. And I would say that that's a moment when you don't accept that, when you say this is a matter of safety.
One of the interesting things we talked about this
so leadership,
is that the likelihood of you using it is maybe not. Like, we're not going to – it's a once-in-a-whatever flood. But that you analogize this a little bit to us, me having homeowner's insurance. Or, like, no one wants to pay for it, but we do because we have to. Or
car insurance,
whatever else. Right. We do because we have to.
Right. Your goal in spending $2,500 a year in car insurance, let's be honest, is not to have to call State Farm or USAA, right? You don't want to then use it. You don't want to pay for it, but what you really don't want to have to do is have an accident and use it. And so in 10 years, you'll spend $25,000 on car insurance that you hope not to use. And in year 11, somebody hits you. You have a moment of inattention in you, and then you've got the insurance. That's what the gauges and the sirens are there. And they did have experience with very serious flooding
in this region.
So I think
with climate change coming – it strikes me that that is something that every community in its own way is going to have to be measuring weighing the unlikelihood of something happening
against the relatively modest cost. What were the 100 lives worth? Camp counselors, the director of Camp Mystic is dead. So
we're going to get to other matters.
Think about it. Tragic. Think about that spending in terms of
our own issues,
spending that you do for yourself for safety.
We're
not going to get to both.
Amazon Prime Day.
Why are we?
I celebrate it. You know.
Yeah, we're only talking.
When is it?
What did it say in the note that I sent you about Amazon Prime Day?
Ugh.
We're only talking about this
today. It's 4 days.
Yeah, they're calling it Amazon Prime Week.
Is it this week?
It started today, my man.
Oh, so, today! Happy Amazon Prime Week.
It started today.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I think Amazon Prime Week is like the George Washington, the President's Day sale. Nobody was asking for, oh my God, what I really want. Now, I will say that I looked up some deals. Here's what a deal looks like. I just looked at the Apple.
But it's funny, Walmart's doing the same thing now.
Everybody's having deals.
This same week, though. They're having matches.
I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed, not embarrassed, to say I'm not aware that Walmart. Apple AirPods, the routine ones, $129, normally $89 during Prime Week.
Wow, that's a real saving.
Yes.
Happy.
The Apple AirPods Pro, $249, $149 during Prime Week. I would say the only reason to participate in Prime Week is if there's something you would buy otherwise.
That is
on.
And then finally, food dyes. You have big food dye news for us.
Well, I think it was last week or the week before.
We talked about how difficult it is to get natural colors.
That are the right colors.
That are the right colors.
Four big food companies, Nestle, ConAgra, General Mills, and PepsiCo, have agreed to RFK Jr.'s voluntary request to eliminate the last artificial food dyes. Those companies together make Cheetos, Lucky Charms, Jell-O, and Kool-Aid.
Such good colors.
All brightly colored.
Brightly colored. I love a Cheeto.
By the end of 2020,
really orange.
Let's be honest, half the fun of a Cheeto or Jell-O is the color. If the red Jell-O were kind of pale, it wouldn't be as
fun. So what's happening?
Mars, M&M Mars.
Yeah.
But you know what they make?
M&Ms.
And
I'm going to go ahead and guess M&Ms.
Skittles.
Oh, and Skittles.
M&Ms and Skittles. They are resisting.
Really?
Also Kellogg, which makes
so you're saying
Fruit
that
Loops.
Harvard and M&Ms standing
Harvard,
up to the force.
Harvard and M&Ms. Right?
Harvard and M&Ms
standing up to the force.
Truth, justice, the American
Fruit, we're still Fruit Loops, be able to get. Fruit Loops and the M&M, the dancing M&Ms. It's not clear. Here's what's interesting. In 2027, the state of Texas is going to require warning labels on candy and other foods that still contain artificial dyes, which is interesting. Be interesting to know. I mean, the warning labels on cigarettes, how much have they done? I don't know. West Virginia in 2028 is going to ban sale of foods that contain artificial dyes. RFK Jr. has not taken the step of trying to ban these because I think he thought if you can get the big four, if you can use peer pressure to change it. But I mean, I'm still sort of, are there people who eat so many M&Ms that even
there are certainly people eat a lot of colored food.
M&Ms,
I probably eat a lot
whose
of colored
diet food. Is M&Ms and Fruit Loops?
No, but what they
I'm skeptical that this is the reason Americans aren't.
I agree with you.
I am skeptical that this. I would think that everybody getting 15 or 20 minutes of exercise a day would be a much more valuable campaign for us. Anyway, West Virginia banning them.
All right.
You
don't think you should eat vegetables?
I eat vegetables.
All right, we made it. Jeffrey, did you notice we didn't even fight, really? It was pretty peaceable. Really.
I can't hear Jeffrey.
Well
is
done,
Jeffrey.
I didn't give my headphone, Jeffrey. So it's only you, just you and me now. that's happily.
You guys have a good week.
All right, Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's going next on Jason John. Jessica Benson, Brevin Knight will join their program today. Tim Murray will join me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, buddy. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. For now, work is done.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.